Commons Conversations is a series of interviews in which campaigners share their experiences and insights into activism, learning in movements, and radical history. Produced by the Commons Social Change Library, episodes in the fourth series cover multicultural and First Nations voices from the climate movement, regional and rural organising, artivism, fierce vulnerability and radical resilience, the fight against corporate disinformation, campaigns countering the far right, and more. The 2025 to 2026 series can be heard on Saturday afternoons between 1 and 2pm in December and January on 3CR, or found as a podcast at 3cr.org.au/actingup or via commonslibrary.org. Welcome to Commons Conversations. My name is Ian McIntyre, and in today's episode I chat with artivist Jess Harwood about the role of comics and art in creating social change, as well as her work with various campaigns and organisations.
Can you tell us about when you first developed a passion for art, and when did that turn to a focus on illustration, comics and cartoons in particular?
I think I was at school when I went to school. It was the Howard years. The Chaser was on TV, if you remember those times. And I was just a very nerdy kid who had big views on John Howard and nuclear energy and climate change and the Iraq War, but I also really liked to draw. And so I actually started drawing cartoons at school. They were terrible. And I actually did for my last year, like art project, a big project where I did cartoons, or I did an art response to all the big things that happened in the last year I was at school. And I looked at them recently and God, they are so cringe. But anyway, I really had a go back in the day, but it really started at school, I think. But then I kind of went on to study law and try and be a lawyer for a time. And it kind of fell by the wayside in those years, but it kind of came back thanks to Scott Morrison. I like to say the one good thing he did for me was he made me a cartoonist just by being utterly infuriating.
Yeah, so you mentioned studying the law, but you've worked as a campaigner and a communications professional. So could you tell us about some of the roles you've played over the years and some of the campaigns that you worked on?
Yes, I think I've always been involved in campaigns probably since at school, either locally or, in political campaigns. But I trained as a lawyer at the Environmental Defenders Office. So I really wanted to be an environmental lawyer, but then saw that I had to do, maybe 10 years at a corporate law firm and kind of thought, I'm not going to probably hack that, I don't think. My first real job was at New South Wales Farmers Association, which was in the early 2010s when there was a big expansion of coal seam gas across the state, and farmers were being approached, at the local pub and everywhere for access for exploration. And these sort of like $2 exploration companies were popping up everywhere. So I was, my first job out of law school was actually working with farmers to help them understand their legal rights. So it was kind of like a comms job, but a kind of semi-legal as well. But I went on from there to work at Humane Society International on, shark campaigns and biodiversity programs. And then I went to the Sunrise Project and worked on mainly climate kind of communications and particularly on coal expansions there. So I kind of was involved in the Stop Adani campaign a bit and other various coal campaigns.
The balance has changed for you this year, and we'll get into that later. But I'm curious about the way that at that time when you were doing those sort of campaign roles, how you were juggling that with art and activism. And were you able to did you find them complementary, or was there kind of a tension between the different parts of yourself in terms of time and energy and focus?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who kind of tries to straddle two ways of being, it kind of is a bit of a struggle. And to be honest, I got pretty depleted by that juggle. But in a way, I think over time, art really became more a way of thinking for me, particularly in communications. Like I found myself, during the day, I might be at my job, I'd be writing key messages in response to something, a coal mine approval or something. But as I was writing those messages, because I am a very visual person, I started to think in terms of visuals. And so, I'd kind of start thinking, well, if this was a four panel comic that I was going to share on Instagram, what would be the message on the first tile and the picture that would stop everyone from scrolling and read this? And then I would kind of, that would be my first main top line key message. And then, so it would, they kind of came together, I think, by the end of it. But, I'd be doing verbal comms, writing key messaging documents and other things during the day. And then probably after work, I would then be like, well, I already had this idea for a cartoon, so I may as well just spend half an hour drawing that up now and put it online. So it kind of made my days quite long, really, but it was, they were really complementary ways of thinking, I think. I did that for years, I think. But yeah, I think I just think in a visual way. Like I really think there's not a lot of difference between key messaging documents and comics, because you it's the same sort of like bite-sized message you have in each panel. And really, once you kind of get into the mode of thinking about things in terms of a couple of key messages, you've kind of got a comic already written there. You just have to kind of draw it up and put some nice pictures with it.
In general, when you were doing that kind of communications work and having done it for some time, is there anything you'd like to share that you learned about communicating effectively and some of the, I guess, the biggest challenges in that kind of work?
I think for me, I think I learned through doing that. I learned so much about comms and about how to structure comics and tell, bite-sized stories that kind of motivate people to action or to care about something. I think one of the main things I learned was about timeliness and just how important, I kind of see like some people are, they do comics, but they'll do like a really long form comic and it'll take a long time to produce. And, for some issues that kind of works, some campaigns, because it's an ongoing top issue. But if for many things, particularly in climate, it's like, okay, this coal mine gets approved and you kind of have 6 hours to 24 hours at most to make a comment on it. Otherwise everyone's moved on. And so I think really getting, I really stress the timeliness in my comics to maybe to the detriment of what they look like sometimes. And sometimes I draw something and I've really learned that it's the more, most important thing is the message and the timeliness and the like to get the commentary out there. Sometimes I draw things and I'm like, this looks terrible, but I'm still going to post it because I think it's timely and, people will still engage with it. And I've actually found that as long as it's, the comment is important enough that people resonate with it, it actually doesn't matter at all what it looks like. And people don't really want something polished necessarily. They just want something, they want to engage with commentary on something when that thing happens. So I've kind of started drawing worms, actually. I draw people as worms a lot now because as Meta starts scraping all of our artworks for AI, I kind of thought, well, you can just scrape these pictures of worms. They take no, like literally 2 seconds to draw. And I have actually found people actually sometimes like the worm drawings better. And I'm just like, so yeah, I think timeliness, importance of the message is kind of like the most, the top thing. What stuff looks like is secondary, really. If it looks nice, that's a bonus.
Yeah, awesome. Just getting a bit more into the way that you've used art to generate sort of discussion and to support activism. Let's just wondering which cartoonists you drew inspiration from.
Oh man, so many. I'm gonna veer away from saying the regular, well, they're not the regular, but the political cartoonists that are associated with newspapers that everyone knows, because I think we all kind of know them. But I think like Australia has a really vibrant, amazing comic art scene. And there are people who don't have, regular cartooning jobs who are nonetheless doing incredible artivist work, art and activist work, just because they care a lot about, and they can draw and they have a message. So like Sam Wollman is an amazing unionist and artist. I absolutely love his stuff, and he's just like a stellar human being as well. His work is just absolutely beautiful and also really important. Safda Ahmed, also another friend of mine, he does a lot of work on human rights and like really critical commentary on Palestine and refugees in Australia. And there is a group called the Comic Art Workshop, and I've been really fortunate to connect with them early on when I kind of got into comics, and O'Leary Harris and Josh Santesburito and Pat Grant and Sarah Firth, and there's like a huge bunch of people who are connected with the Comic Art Workshop, and they are just the biggest bunch of legends I think I've ever met anywhere. They're really supportive of each other's work. They really care about big issues. They have a lot of commentary that they do because they care. And it's not, there's like not a lot of opportunities for comic artists in Australia, really. And everyone's really just doing this work because they can draw and they have a story to tell, or they want to make some change. And they kind of just do it off their own bat. And Comic Art Workshop has really helped a lot of budding artists kind of do graphic novels and bigger bits of work. And so they're just incredible. But so that's for Australian artists. But I just also want to give a shout out to Rohan Chakravarty, who is an Indian artist, cartoonist. And I really love his work. He does particularly nature comics. And I absolutely love what he does. He sometimes is in the Hindu, which is a newspaper in India. And he's a great guy as well, and got, great values and politics, and really cares about the planet as well. Yeah, if anyone listening to this would, support local comic artists that you have in your community and in Australia, they're just real legends, and they tell interesting stories too. Stories that, like, they're a very diverse group of people. And so they're telling stories that I think don't actually get told anywhere else. And you get to look at pictures. It's really nice.
Yeah, and you mentioned the term artivist.
Yes.
How would you define an artivist?
An artivist. I think for me, it's someone who, you like drawing. You really care about social change or environmental justice, climate justice, social justice, and you just combine the two as much as you can. Because, for me, it kind of has become like, I don't know, art is my number one way of thinking and being, I think. But I really care about climate justice and social justice. And so wherever possible, I try and just combine the two. I think art is actually so important in campaigns. Every campaign has, a strong visual or a particular artwork or artist that kind of has helped that campaign come, be shared and come into being. So yeah, he's like, love artivism. We need more of that.
And for you, where was, in terms of your cartoons and comics with political themes or campaigning themes, very broadly defined, I mean, where was your work first published?
Published. It's interesting talking about political cartoonists and like the next generation, because the format has been so tied to newspapers for so many years. It's kind of, newspapers are now kind of like on the way out. And so it's a bit of a dying art form sometimes. So a lot of us kind of emerging or younger political cartoonists or cartoonists, we kind of just tend to self-publish wherever we can. So on Instagram or on Facebook or increasingly Substack and Patreon. I've kind of started just putting stuff up on Instagram, I think. Like in the beginning, I didn't know anyone would like my work, so I just kind of shared it. And then I found that, some of them were really like engaging people. And so that kind of became the platform where I started sharing things. And then after a couple of years, The Guardian reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you like to pitch us some ideas?" And so I occasionally now get published in The Guardian. But it really all started just doing stuff after work, off my own bat, and then posting it for free on Instagram, which is how like a lot of cartoonists really do their work or share their work now.
The zine era is kind of
Yes.
behind us, I suppose.
Yeah. Although there's still big zine fairs around the place, but yeah, I think like the future for newspaper cartoonists and that those sort of like published media cartoonists, I don't know what the future is there. I think that's maybe not going to happen.
Yeah, I guess a more broad question would be sort of, and you've already touched on this to some degree, but how do you see cartoons and comics kind of impacting on public and debate and discussion? I guess in ways that other forms of commentary or opinion, like articles and news reports and so forth. What can comics and artwork do that those other sort of forms can't?
Can't do. I think I can't remember what the statistic is, but I don't know, a huge percentage of people are visual learners and they're not going to read a report or a media release or even a couple of paragraphs in a newspaper or an article, but they might look at a cartoon or they might look at a picture on Instagram or they might look at something else, so, a poster on a wall or something like that. For those people, if you're not reaching out to people who are visual, you're kind of missing a lot of your audience, actually. And, in terms of like using art as a mobilizing tool, you actually have to have, I think, something that's going to motivate and engage people and make them feel something. I mean, I think I'm a bit biased because I love pictures, but, I don't think words do that completely. I think you need words and pictures to get the full kind of like emotive response from people. It can be a really good mobilizing tool.
What's your experience has been in terms of, okay, you've got the general sort of artworks that convey messages and emotions and so forth, but you've also used cartoons and comics very specifically to sort of call people to write submissions or contact politicians and so forth. So could you tell us about some of the times you've done that, what the response has been like?
Asking people to write submissions is always a heavy lift, I think, because, it's just a painful thing to do in your own time. But yeah, I have one particular cartoon I did that I'm pretty pleased with. It was, I don't know if you remember, but Clive Palmer, mining magnate, he proposed a coal mine on the Great Barrier Reef coast up in Queensland, Central Queensland coal mine. And I mean, it was the most kind of farcical proposal. It was like 10 kilometres from the World Heritage Area. And it became the only coal mine ever to be rejected in Australian history after an assessment. And part of that was because of the huge number of submissions that were generated from people. And I had a little kind of like proud moment of doing a comic after work one day. I drew Clive Palmer. I found if you draw Clive Palmer, people immediately are just like, they stop scrolling and they're like, oh, what's this guy done now? It's he's got that kind of persona that people kind of want to know what's he up to. Anyway, I did a cartoon asking people to write a submission and it went weirdly viral. Like it got shared over 3,000 times, which for me, for a comic about asking people to write a submission, was pretty big. But I think that was also helped by the fact that the project itself was just absolutely ludicrous. And I could draw like cute little dugongs as well, because they were going to get inundated by sediment from Clive Palmer's coal mine. And, like it was a very delightful, like, place, that area that he was looking to destroy. And so I, drawing the cartoon, I drew on that kind of beauty as well. But yeah, it is actually a remarkably, I know in campaigns we're always asking people to write submissions or contact, MPs and do that sort of thing. But I think that ask via a cartoon with a little bit of information about the project itself and the impacts or whatever the campaign is actually super effective or can be.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, I guess one thing that lots of people on the left and progressive movements sort of are finding that is that changes in algorithms have really shrunken a lot of the reach for progressive political commentary and news on social media. I'm wondering, has there been a similar impact for that kind of commentary and so forth when it's done as cartoons and comics?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I've been thinking about this too, because, for a while there I was straddling campaigning and also just sharing comics as me. And I don't think people or artists sharing comics have had a similar like algorithm restriction. I, of course, over the last, couple of years, people who have done, and including myself, done work on Palestine have had, you see an immediate impact in, like, if you use particular words or your reach will basically diminish. But I think in general, because, sharing cartoons as an artist about a political or like a campaign or social movement, the algorithm doesn't squash that as much as sharing that as an organization or that campaign itself. That's my opinion or what I've observed. And it's really interesting, and I think it's partly to do with whatever they've done to the algorithm's a bit of a blunt instrument, and it's just like, oh, this account is an organization, and so we'll just push that down. But this is a person, and okay, they've got some political views, but they're also posting about, I don't know, what they did on the weekend. So they kind of let that go. I don't know. I do think there is a difference, and it's been quite like stark sometimes. Sometimes I'll share something and it'll go fairly well, but I would be sharing it on other channels and it wouldn't be being shown to anyone.
Right, so good. The cartoons are still getting
Yeah,
through the
that's
mesh.
right. So if you're in a NGO and you want to hook up with a cartoonist, then go for it.
So, yeah, some of your cartoons and posts also sort of have a focus about how art and mindfulness and strategic use of energy and influence can help activists and school students and all of us really to kind of manage stress, health and grief in what are quite dark times. And you've also had a number of works, about your local environment and about sort of grounding yourself in that. So I guess, yeah, just any thoughts you have about some of those kind of works and ideas that you've been keen to impart sort of through them.
I'm aware that I'm kind of posting on Instagram and people are looking at that, and in a way, it feels sometimes it's a bit of a one-way kind of thing where I'm just like, here's a thought I've had, blah, here it is. And, I'll chat to people about it. But I think sometimes I feel like there's these common feelings that I get in response from people. And, particularly recently for example, with Trump in the USA and we've all been watching in Gaza, and I think I've felt that people feel very helpless and overwhelmed. I feel that too. And so occasionally I like to name that in my comics with people, to help not only me but also others. And particularly I've been trying to remind people of, the circle of control and influence, and like always bringing people back to, okay, this feels massive and very overwhelming, but just remember, like, some things you can control and other things you can't, and you can influence some things, and here are some things that you could do that will help you feel less overwhelmed, but actually might help people in Gaza, or might help, fight for democracy in Australia, or whatever it is. So I really think art is an important tool to kind of remind people not to despair and not to stress. And also, like, getting people involved in the process of doing art as well, or encouraging people to, I think kind of like as we get more online and things get more artificial, actually the process of sitting down and drawing, no matter whether you can draw or you think you can or not, everyone can draw, everyone can be an artist. There's a lot of judgment from people, but about their skills, but we can all do it. It's actually the process of sitting down and putting pen to paper and just creating something. It's just so real. And it actually, for some people, if you're not in the state of doing that all the time, it can kind of bring you out of yourself. And I think it's really important to engage in kind of real, those sort of real activities, so that it is a stress management tool as well. And I think I don't know, it's just my way of, I guess, trying to help people to not stress. There's a lot to stress about recently.
Yes. I mean, another, I guess, contribution that you've made via your art has been through being commissioned to do posters and political advertisements for various campaigns and organisations. So, could you tell us a bit about the sort of process involved with those kind of jobs? And I guess, are they usually kind of collaborative or you given a free hand, or does it just totally vary? And then
Yes.
I suppose, in addition to that, what are some examples of works that you enjoyed making or had a particular kind of impact?
I think it really depends on the people, on the campaign. Recently, I've really been enjoying doing a commission with the Muslim Collective, Climate Collective. And that was a really collaborative process, actually, because obviously I'm not Muslim myself. And what we were working on was creating illustrations to tell the story of a survey they had done. And so I worked very closely with them to make sure I was being culturally accurate and appropriate. And I learned so much through doing that as well that I didn't know about the cultures that are not my own. And so that was a real delight to work on that project. But it can be, sometimes I can get like one line of instruction and then I get to work it out myself. And but people have usually, I think they usually have a good idea of kind of what they want, or what they want to say. Occasionally I kind of nudge them in a particular direction that I think will work better, as an image. But usually people are pretty good. And I think I've got now a pretty big portfolio. So they usually look through that and then they go, oh, yeah, something a bit like this. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've been really lucky to work in so many different ways and, collaboratively with a lot of freedom on some things. It's a real, I love the variety of how I work with people. I've been doing a DAAL fellowship with Eucalypt Australia this year, which has been doing comics on eucalypts, and that has been really fun because like I've had they basically said do whatever you like, so I've been able to kind of come up with different comics on eucalypts but also spend a lot of time looking at gum trees, which has just been really good for me, I think. It
Yeah, looking at gum trees is good.
is. We should all do it.
So you've got many different areas that you're working in. So another aspect of your work is graphic recording and sort of harvesting at conferences and gatherings. And yeah, this is something I've only experienced once, but it was at a professional development sort of staff meeting day. But I found it, I mean, both it was interesting, but it was to see the process, but I also found it quite helpful along the sort of standard, kind of minutes and notes. For listeners unfamiliar with the practice, could you explain the process, I guess the role it kind of plays, and then what happens with the artwork afterwards?
Yeah, this is something I think it's been around in Europe and the US a lot longer than Australia. I think there's still not that many. Well, there's some people who have been doing it for a long time. Sarah Firth is really excellent and has been doing it for a decade. She's a real master of graphic recording. It's called graphic recording or graphic harvesting. It can also be called scribing. I sometimes call it live illustration just because that people kind of get what that means. But what it is for interest at conference, it's for visual learners, it's a bit of a spectacle, and it gives you some really cool artworks at the end. So you'll have an artist sit in on, say, a panel or an entire day at your conference, and they will draw, there'll be portraits of the panelists, they'll respond in real time to what's being said and draw pictures and words. It's like kind of like sketchnoting, or like a lot of people do that. They'll be at a conference and they'll just be drawing little things in their book, but it's kind of doing it in a professional sense. And it's the biggest kind of, well, personally, it's the biggest adrenaline rush I think you can get as an artist, because you have literally no idea what people are going to say. And then everyone's watching your work projected up on the screen, to see how you're going to respond to it. And they get to see it warts and all, like my spelling mistakes and then me rubbing that out and writing things again. And but it's really good for, I think it's good for people. Well, one, you can tune out if you're in a day-long conference. You can just get a little bit bored and your brain gets tired, but it helps people reinforce what's being said through images and words. And so I think it's actually really quite powerful to as an add-on to your conference. And then at the end you get this, beautiful, well, typically whoever's doing the artwork will then sit, afterwards, we'll kind of refine it and make it look really beautiful. And then you have some amazing kind of visual record of what happened at your conference. So it's something you can then share with the attendees, or you can put on social media, and you can cut it up into, like drawing people's portraits and then providing those portraits as individual files to people. So they've got a little drawing of themselves. It's kind of fun. I really like it, and I hope, like my hope is to get more into that, because it is a challenge, and but it's also, I don't know, I find it's really great to respond on the fly in art and in words. The challenge is listening and translating what's being said into visuals in real time. You kind of have to get into that flow state to make that work. But once you do, it's a lot of fun.
I guess your artworks also has been printed out as placards and kind of featured on banners at demonstrations and so forth. So, yeah, can you tell us about some sort of instances of these? And I guess this is a very popular kind of, way of people making art in politics. I mean, often the, it'll just be some text, but even the text sort of varies and stuff. So, yeah, just some thoughts about kind of placards and banners.
Oh, look, I did that, but I was really inspired by, do you remember the school strikes and those incredible placards that all the students came up with? Like, art, it just shows how universal art and activism is for, it's like, those signs were just so incredible. And that's kind of where in way it started for me, I think, because during those bushfires in 2019, I did a few sketches of, I think, Scott Morrison and then a koala holding koalas, not coal. And then suddenly, there was all those mass rallies over that summer. And then I saw people were printing them out and taking them to rallies. And I thought that was so cool because obviously people wanted to turn up with a sign and they might not be able to make one themselves. And so I was like, oh, this is great. Like, and so I started putting up artwork and being and saying, if you want to print this out and take it to a rally, go for it. But like since then, I guess I like to do art that's, I know what it's like to work in a campaign and you get some visuals and and you want to use that visual those works really flexibly. So you want them online, you want them in print, you want them on social media, you want them on a banner, and so I like to produce work that can be used in multiple different ways because, yeah, I just know how important that is in campaigns. So typically I'll do, if I do a commission for someone, I'll try and make it so that it can be cut for a banner or cut for a poster and then, trimmed down for the social media formats and things like that. That's a real challenge, but I think it's, why just limit an artwork to just one format when you can use it in all these different ways.
So another thing that you've been involved with is sort of running art workshops. For instance, you did one at Canopy Fest, where you focused on learning to cartoon and speak for the trees. And I love the Lorax reference.
Yes.
And you've also done sort of workshops on topics like comic art for environmental storytelling and behaviour change and so forth. They're kind of two different sorts of workshops, really, aren't they? So maybe if you could talk firstly about how helping others with doing art can help them to build connections to the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I love running workshops. I think I just love seeing people realize they can create something and getting in, like getting excited by that kind of creativity aspect of things. I think like the first art workshop like that I ran was actually in Bulga, which is a little community in New South Wales that was kind of, fighting coal expansion. And this was back in 2013, I think, or 2012. And I, was talking to the community there and I came up with a whole lot of art supplies and a lot of people came down to just create something which spoke to, their connection to that land and also their fight to protect the little town from the coal expansion. And that was like really delightful because we had, anyone from an 80-year-old to a, 10-year-old or 5-year-old coming and people were creating art and talking and we actually compiled those artworks into a submission that went into the New South Wales planning system to say that that town shouldn't be destroyed or shouldn't be impacted. It was a really powerful workshop, I think, because people were using art and I do remember this like 80-year-old farmer came along and he'd pretty much never drawn anything in his entire life and he did the most beautiful tree. It was really stunning, and it was really delightful to watch him realize that he could draw this incredible tree that was on his property. And kudos to him for being open to trying something different. But I absolutely loved that workshop. But yeah, I think it's really important. I think that people are increasingly looking for real experiences as well. And particularly for kids, you know, something that's not screen based. And so running comic workshops or art workshops, and then talking, you know, I typically come up with different activities for whoever's there. You know, for the Canopy Fest one, I gave all the kids some panels on a piece of paper, and I'd drawn the first panel, which had a cockatoo and a possum talking to each other, and then they had to finish or come up with a story to finish that comic. And with a couple of prompts and the right amount of kind of information, you can really take people on a little journey to talking and thinking about their local environment through art. I just really love that. I love workshops. I love kids' workshops in particular because they're just hilarious. How that possum and the cockatoo ended up was, you know, one of them became a princess, one of them got married and then got a divorce. You know, like kids are just hilarious as well.
Cool. So you've recently, relatively recently, taken the step to make artivism your main focus and the way that you make your living. What led to this change and how's it going? And I guess what are some of the challenges of making a living as an illustrator and artist, particularly now with sort of AI being used more and more?
It's going really well, actually. I made the change because I found juggling the two modes of work kind of really too much for me in the end. And I also thought, you know, what if I'd never try this as a full-time gig and I never know what would, you know, what how it would hap how it would have gone. I'd probably kick myself. And so, yeah, I keep pinching myself because so far it's so good. Like, I've got plenty of work, and, you know, I do realize it might not always be this way, but I'm really enjoying it while it lasts and while it's good. Yeah, the challenges, I think AI sucks, doesn't it, for artists so much. Although I don't know, I do think about AI a lot just because I see a lot of soulless AI rubbish being shared around the place. And I definitely have clients that haven't come back to me for art. Not that they have tended not to be like in the social change area, but I definitely have clients who are probably now using AI instead of my work. But interestingly, they got me to do really boring work. So maybe it's better that they're using AI. I don't know. But yeah, I think it is a hard time for artists at the moment. And my hope is that, you know, the more we get flooded with all this artificial kind of work from AI, which I find quite uninspiring, the more people will be seeking out real life artists and who have stories to tell that who are real. That's my hope. I'm sure there will be a big chunk of people who, you know, don't seek that out and don't care, but I do think there will be, you know, like the way people love makers, and people who can, you know, they'll buy a table that's been made by someone and they'll be so, you know, they'll really value that skill. My hope is that the same is going to happen with artists. And I think personally, I'm maybe a little bit inoculated against AI because I do comms and art together. Until AI can do fully amazingly, you know, scripted comic that kind of responds to a particular political situation or report, or, you know, is very nuanced, which maybe we are getting there, I don't know. But I feel there will still be need for like people who have a comms hat and an art hat. That's my hope anyway.
So I guess in terms of economics, another way that art's often used in movements is, I guess, for sort of combination of kind of fundraising and awareness. And you've done some things such as the tea towels for Nature New South Wales and a Lock the Gate t-shirt. Yeah, could you tell us a little bit about those examples and the way that you've used work, yeah, to help fund movements?
Yeah, coming up with the ideal t-shirt design that people want to wear is like, that is a good challenge, I think. Yeah, merch is, I think I've personally been, I do merch designs for orgs, but, and campaigns, but I, you know, it is a big lift, I think, to do merch. It's easy for me, like I'm happy to design it, but I do know that occasionally I'll have an idea for like, oh, that would make a great t-shirt. But actually printing the merch and sending it out, and that is quite difficult to do. So I know that there's Campaigns do use it as fundraising, but it is a heavy lift, I think, for a lot of people. And you do need a lot of people hands-on, kind of ready to package up stuff and send it out. Once you get a good merch design, it's or like a good campaign design, something that is wearable, like that is, I think that's like kind of the holy grail, isn't it, for a campaign? You think of the like the No Dams earrings and the Stop Adani campaign, earrings as well, like those really punchy visuals, something that everyone wants to actually put on their body. That's kind of elite art, I think.
So, sort of coming towards the end, I guess for artists listening to this conversation, what messages or advice would you like to share with them about working for social change?
I guess just find the thing that you really care about and create on it. And I know so many people are already doing that in such an amazing way, but we really need you. If you're listening and you're an artist, you're so important and what you do is so important. And I know sometimes it's hard to feel like it's being valued or, because we are kind of surrounded by images all the time, but what you create does change minds, it does mobilize people, it does touch and move people, and that is the most incredible thing, I think. So yeah, kudos to you, doing an amazing job. Keep doing it, we need
Awesome. And I guess for the non-artistically inclined activists and organizations who are
you.
listening, what would you like them to know about working with artists, or what shouldn't they do? What could they do that helps?
Hire us. No. Yeah, I think most organizations know how important art is for campaigns. And what could I tell them? I would say there's just an incredible amount of passionate artists in Australia who want their work to be used and be powerful and to be hired to do incredible good, work for social change. And who really care about social justice and climate justice and environmental justice. And there's more of them than you would think. And anyone is welcome to reach out to me and say, I'm looking for someone who has this lived experience and creates art on blah. I think it's really important to find artists who, and there will be someone, I think, on most issues who can speak to a particular issue and create on a particular issue. I think it's important to find the right person, and but there are lots of us comic artists out there who might be the right person. So reach out to us, but please reach out to us more than a week before you need the artwork, because I always get emails being like, so we have a rally next week. Could you draw something for that? And I'm like, oh gosh, not really. Or okay, I will, but that's a sleepless night. So yeah. Bring artists in from the beginning or from early on, because it's nice. Like, we also create better art when we're not doing it really quickly.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking with us. I guess, is there anything, any other thoughts you'd like to share before we go? And I guess, where can people find your work?
People can find me on, I'm mainly on Instagram, I guess, but I also have recently started a Patreon. So I'm at Jess Harwood Art or jessharwood.com. And I don't have anything else to share other than I love artists, I love art, and yeah, hire us. We're great for your campaigns.